If you hear this song, you know what time it is. It's time for our conversation with our Falcons insider, Joe Patrick. He gets his own walk-up music here because he deserves it, quite frankly. On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, he's been a busy, busy man at Flowery Branch. Joe, welcome in. Let's start with a little fracas going on between some of the defensive line and offensive line. Joe, big enough that it made ESPN, made SportsCenter. Ulbrich had to comment on it. What did you see? What did you hear? Describe for our audience everything that went down between the offensive line and defensive line at camp over the weekend.
Well, I hate to disappoint you here, Chris, but this just so happened to be the one day of training camp I wasn't able to get to because of a previous commitment that I just couldn't get out of. And, you know, like you said, like, what a day to miss. You know, did no one tell James Spears Jr. about the Sunday truce? I thought that was a thing, according to the It Show The Wire. But, yeah, apparently, you know, does set it up with a few of the Falcons' offensive linemen. But, you know, it's great for us, right? It's great for us to talk about. And I got to say, I was thinking about this. I don't think I've ever seen a football fan who is like genuinely disturbed about like maybe if they were like, you know, it was some ongoing thing or whatnot. But generally speaking, if it's like the first fight of camp, I feel like fans are always kind of ready for that. And honestly, you know, what's funny is talking to some of the players afterwards, or I wasn't talking to them, but I was obviously watching everything they said afterwards. They were like not so against it either. The coaches are obviously a little bit more like, you know, we gotta maintain some order here. But I think the players do enjoy kind of the adrenaline rush that they get out of that kind of thing. And I hope that it signals good things for us when the pads come on this week.
Yeah, I mean, listen, with the defense being as interesting and needy, I'll use polite words, as it has been the last few years, I think seeing a little spark from these guys out there is nothing but a sight for sore eyes. What did you gather?
Chris, can I add, you know, I thought Kirk Cousins said something interesting, which was that he thinks that, like, part of this kind of energy, I guess, that was being presented by James Pierce Jr., we'll call it, is kind of part of the coaching tree that he observes where Jeff Ulbrich comes from initially, from like the kind of the Gus Bradley school and Pete Carroll, and just kind of that like high intensity. And Jeff Ulbrich has kind of described his defense as like, you know, what we do tactically, like all teams are doing something similar tactically, defensively, but what makes defenses special is that like that bond and that personality that the defense has. And I think that that's kind of an interesting way to see it from Kirk Cousins' eyes, you know, a quarterback who's been around and seen lots of these different kinds of defenses. And he talked about it, like kind of being from that tree, and Raheem Morris has obviously kind of been around those types of defenses. So maybe that's a part of what we're seeing here as well.
Something that we talked about last week, were you surprised to see Kirk speak?
No, I wasn't surprised. No, I mean, I always figured he would, and it's probably, I wouldn't be surprised if he talks, you know, maybe again before training camp is over. Depends on if something happens, maybe in a preseason game or something, but no, I wasn't surprised. And, you know, I think that kind of goes with, who he is. You know, Terry Fontenot echoed it also in his press conference earlier in the day, saying that Kirk has been, you know, the utmost professional when he's been around the Falcons since all of this happened. And I think that you see that too in Kirk's, you know, in his just the way he acts in these press conferences, these press scrums. He's not standoffish. He's not giving short answers. He's still bonding with teammates. You know, he told a story about kind of sitting there and having a meal in the cafeteria with David Sills, the fifth, who's kind of on the scout team and he's had a connection with on the second unit. So, you know, all things you would hope and expect to hear out of a backup quarterback. So I think that you have to, you know, maybe it gets gratuitous sometimes, you know, from some people where it's like, oh, you just kind of going over the top with how you're handling a demotion. But I think just generally speaking, it's been all according to the way the coaches would have wanted to see it.
Sounds like the signing of DJ Chark was semi-coincidental based off of what we heard this weekend, that they were interested in looking at him prior to the Darnell Mooney injury. When Mooney comes back, do you expect him to have a shot to, you know, make the team and play a role?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think for when the news happened, I think that people put a little bit more stock into it than I did in terms of how genuine his chance is to make this team. Frankly, I think a lot of people didn't even consider that he wouldn't, just considering his track record in the NFL. And I think that ultimately he will. I actually did a little 53-man projection for the podcast. So shout out Joe Patrick on football there. But I think that one of the reasons why it was so kind of coincidental, like you say, or I would kind of say just like fortuitous, and with regards to the timing, is I think that considering they wanted to work him out, that to me signaled that they were actually looking for kind of the backup X receiver, and Darnell Mooney is the X receiver on this football team. It's not Drake London, actually, which you normally kind of associate the best receiver on a team with being the X, but it's really Darnell Mooney who's the X on this team, which requires lots of, trying to beat guys on vertical routes quite often, that type of thing. We saw the game that Darnell Mooney played last year, and I think that Casey Washington was probably the guy that they were hoping to groom into that role, and that's why I'm like more kind of skeptical about Casey Washington's chances to make the team with this signing, because I kind of see it as DJ Chark kind of being that profile who can be the fill-in version for Darnell Mooney if something were to happen to him. Obviously, he dealt with a little bit of injuries down the very end of the season, and I think that they were just looking for that guy. It just so happened that he then goes down as soon as they have this workout scheduled. So it kind of works out, I think, that they were able to get him in, if my theory is correct. But ultimately, I think the Falcons are obviously happy to bring in a experienced receiver to that room.
Talking all things Falcons with our insider Joe Patrick here on the waitfor.com hotline. Make sure you check out Joe Patrick on Football for all your latest Falcons news and information. The new podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. I got our first sniff at the kicking competition. Looks like Koo went 4 for 4 from a little shorter distance, but Krieg, Joe, 5 for 5, including a couple from 50 plus.
Yeah. Showing the legs. So, good to see them kind of go at it. And I think I actually heard, I think Koo may have missed one. That's what I
yeah,
thought
he
I
was
read
four
that,
for
but
five.
I 4 for 5. Right. And the one that he missed, I believe being the longest attempt at like, somewhere over 50 yards.
I think it was 40. I think it was 48. I don't
oh,
think
was
he,
it?
I don't think he, they actually
okay.
had him attempt a 50 yarder. Krieg did though. He
oh,
had two of
interesting.
them.
Okay. Yeah, so that'll be interesting. I actually talked to Koo late last week about, his kind of journey, his injury situation that he had last year, and basically what he told me was that he has typical soreness. I think people would be surprised that there is like soreness associated with kickers after they kick, and they actually schedule them so they actually don't even kick every day in training camp. They only kick every other day so they get that rest that they need for those ligaments, because it's they're touchy, they're sensitive people. But he said he felt that soreness at one point after a game last year. He didn't remember exactly which one it was, but or at least didn't want to share it. But the soreness kind of never went away, and it's like he said it's one of those injuries where if it's any other football player, it's not as important for them. And they definitely just play right through it. They probably don't even report it. But for me, it was, a really kind of important muscle in the groin, and it wasn't getting better. He got an injection, or I'm sorry, they let it rest. And it just like kind of didn't get better. And then ultimately they do make the move. But that's when he first started popping up on the injury report with what they were calling a hip at the time, before he ultimately went on the injured reserve for the season. Then he said he got an injection in the off season to help the healing, let it rest for about a month, and then back on the kicking grind. So, good test for him. I do expect him to win that job ultimately, by the way.
When it comes to tomorrow, first padded practice, what are some of the things you're going to be looking for?
Well, I'm kind of expecting it to be a little bit downer of a day, like in terms of the intensity, just because I feel like the first day that they put on the pads, they'll do some things, of course, but I feel like that's more like they're going to have to, I think they want them to get acclimated to having the pads on in the heat, you never want to say like they're not going hard, but like there are clearly days where they like rev them up and have them be more intense for a longer period of time. I think we'll see a shorter session tomorrow, but I'm interested to see if the defense kind of bounces back, because it's interesting. The offense was kind of the winner between the two sides on day one, and then defense came back on day two and was causing some turnovers, kind of doing a better job at stifling Michael Penix. And then, you know, apparently, again, I wasn't there, but, you know, Michael Penix, and, you know, I've heard several touchdowns, a deep ball to Ray McLeod, and the offense came back as kind of the winners of that day three. So it'll be interesting to see if the defense can kind of reassert themselves and establish themselves. And if not, you know, how does that manifest? It's always interesting to kind of see how that battle goes. And especially, I think, for this Falcons team that's led by I almost said a rookie quarterback, but feels like a rookie quarterback. You know, you have that feeling. So you want to see how he also kind of, you know, adapts to everything that happens.
When it comes to the running back position, I'm trying to get a feel. Do you, I know this is something we've talked about, but is a Carlos Washington, is there somebody else there that you feel like you mentioned you did your mock draft or mock position battle today. Do you think there's anybody out there that could make the roster as a third running back?
Yeah, I think there will be a third running back that makes the roster. And I would say usually teams would carry four running backs, or you'll often see that. That's what the team did last year, for example. But when I look at it, you know, you got obviously Bijan and Tyler Algier, and then it's like, I would be curious how many Falcons fans even know a running back on this roster by name outside of those two. But Carlos Washington Jr. has now been on this practice squad since training camp for a couple of years now. And to me, he's always impressed. He never makes the team on the 53-man roster, but he continues to get claimed by the Falcons, put on their practice squad, and goes the entire year on the practice squad, which tells you something. I mean, that tells you that they do value him, because, you know, guys will come on and off practice squads as they want to pick players up and churn those spots. So that tells you something about how they value him. And it's basically between him and Jashaun Corbin, who the team acquired, you know, late in the offseason. He was that XFL signing. So it's kind of going to, I think, be a battle between the two of them for basically one roster spot. And I kind of think the Falcons will only go into, I think they'll only carry three running backs on the initial 53-man. That's kind of because I think they need to try to be conscious about saving roster spots for some other areas that are a little overcrowded, like the edge room, for example, where Khalid Kareem is kind of emerging as, in my opinion, a guy that you cannot expose to waivers. So going to be very interesting, I think, that battle between Jashaun Corbin and Carlos Washington Jr.
How many this is interesting. We won't give out any more spoilers because I want to make sure people check out the podcast, Joe Patrick on Football. How many interior defensive linemen did you have them keeping?
So I actually only had them keeping seven, which was down from last year. I don't know if that how crazy that is or not, but when I was looking at it last year, They counted James Smith Williams as a defensive lineman, which I wouldn't have. I would have put him in the edge category, but that's what they had him listed as. And then they also had Eddie Goldman. And to me, that's kind of a specialty position, especially in an odd front, like a 3-4 defense that I don't know Jeff Ulbrich is going to be as high on. I think that they will still want that profile player like Eddie Goldman was in a Lakeil London, who I think it will be on their practice squad. I don't know if they carry that player on as a 53 on the 53-man, though. So I've only got them with seven. And basically, it's all the veterans. It's almost every defensive lineman that's in camp right now. In fact, I think it was Simeon Barrow Jr., I believe is his name, an undrafted rookie from Miami. I think it was the only defensive lineman I had in their camp currently that didn't make the 53-man.
And do you think Rook starts?
I do. Yeah, absolutely. I think that he's a starter along with David Onyemata. Although there's going to be plenty of rotation with those guys on the interior, as there already has been so far through camp. But yeah, for sure. I think he'll probably play the most snaps, I think, honestly, of any Falcons defensive lineman if he stays healthy.
And they drafted up to get him in the second round, as he should. Joe Patrick, appreciate the time.
Mm-hmm, yep.
As always, we'll chat on Friday. Looking forward to getting the skinny on what happened this week at camp. And again, give the people where they can find the podcast and the name one more time.
Yeah, Joe Patrick on Football, wherever you get podcasts. All you can go, I'll shout out on 99 The Game's YouTube page. That's where you can actually watch it if you want to. And for this one, it's maybe a little bit more important because I throw the document up of the 53-man roster, so it's easier to follow along.
All right, everybody, bring your homework sheets now so you can go along with Joe as he fills out the 53-man roster for the Falcons. Appreciate it, my friend. We'll talk on Friday.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
All right, that is Joe Patrick there. Joe Patrick on Football is the podcast. When we get back, let's keep the Falcons conversation going. If you didn't get a chance to get in earlier on the phones, I will take more of your calls. 404-726-0929. Is simply making the playoffs good enough for the Falcons this season? Current votes are in right now. Yes, just get in, 63%. no need to make some noise at 37%. What do you think? Give me a call, 404-7609-29, 404-726-0929 is the number. Is Simply Making the Playoffs good enough? Your call's next. Chris Thomas tonight.